We're back with Mel Weiss, Getting Smart, and we're going to pick it up with, you wanted to distinguish between the Swiss and the Germans a little bit, Mel?
Yeah. You know, and I said this publicly at big press conferences in Germany. As a matter of fact, Madeleine Albright was at one of them. And I said, the Swiss banks tried to settle the cases, but the Swiss government turned their backs on us.
Mm.
And when we got to the German cases, the German government tried to help, but the German companies treated it as nothing but litigation. And, you know, it showed that there was still no heart in the way they approached these cases.
No remorse. Not much remorse, huh?
Yeah. No. As a matter of fact, there was a cartoon that I have carried around with me all the time in Switzerland, where they have a Jew with payas, you know what the payas are,
mm-hmm.
the hair that grows long,
mm-hmm.
and they have a bench press that looks like a menorah upside down, pressing against a head that says Swiss, with coins coming out of the mouth of the Swiss figure.
Huh.
That's what they were publishing during the course of these litigations in Switzerland.
Terrible,
yeah,
terrible.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting back to the
prologue.
Prologue. Mm-hmm. I have to read this to you. Ellie came into my office in the winter of 1998, bearing a smile on her sweet face, a smile I later realized is permanently affixed to cloak the unimaginable remembrances of a past so horrible that they transcend our ability to comprehend.
Mm.
The Holocaust survivor at the age of 15 was transported from a home with her 37-year-old mother and 5-year-old brother to Auschwitz by cattle car. On that arrival, they were unloaded with hundreds of others only to be separated, one group to the left and the other to the right, by a Nazi officer wearing white gloves. Ellie later learned that the officer was Dr. Josef Mengele, the infamous Nazi doctor who used human beings as medical guinea pigs. Ellie wound up on the right, her mother and brother on the left. Ellie never saw them again alive.
Hmm.
After surviving over a year in several concentration camps, including Auschwitz, and working as a slave laborer at a Volkswagen plant, Ellie was freed by the Allies and went back to Romania, married, had a son and a daughter, and later moved to the United States. 50 years later, she participated with teenagers from the United States in the March of the Living, visiting Auschwitz and walking with the youth to the site of the murders, where she saw photographs of various images that she endured every day of her life, those of the concentration camp and her life as a slave laborer. But a particular photograph stood out among the others. First, she spotted the white glove that, by a wave of the left hand, separated her from her loved ones.
Mm.
Then Ellie was thunderstruck by the picture of her mother holding her young brother in her arms, standing in front of the railroad cars, surrounded by hundreds of other prisoners, rendered speechless, numbed by the vision that she thought she would carry forever only in her memory, Ellie went home and started to write. She spoke little, but wrote much. She wrote poems. I promised that I would publish Ellie's poems. Here they are.
Wow. And that's the book, huh?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get that book.
And she goes around and she gives lectures.
Yeah.
I did a press conference with her after we filed that case for her.
Yeah.
And CNN interviewed her. And I took her aside and I said, Ellie, I can't believe you're so strong as to be able to do what you did today. She said, if me, if not me, who else?
Yeah, yeah. What's the name of the book of her poems? Mel, can you give the title?
The Poems of Ellie Gross.
Okay.
Memories of a Holocaust Survivor.
So it's E-L-L-I-E-G-R-O-S-S? Is that how you spell Ellie? Ellie?
E-L-L-Y.
Y, okay. I definitely want to get that. Well, Mel, that's, I mean, what a case, because, I mean, you brought this case in the U.S. for crimes that were committed overseas, so it was a very creative use of an imaginative use of the law. No one had ever done that before, and the victims, I guess there were 1.5 million victims all over the world, so I guess you needed organizations to help distribute the funds to everybody, right?
Well, we had, look, we never got past the courts. The judges in the German cases threw out the cases.
Hmm.
Judge Corman in the Swiss case never decided it because he knew that we were doing our work outside of the courts.
Hmm.
We were holding press conferences.
Yeah.
We went to all the state and municipal controllers throughout the country.
Oh, I didn't know that. So you initially tried to bring the cases in Germany and Switzerland, and they just
No.
We
brought them here.
Right.
But we did our work through public relations.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of the state controllers to help us, like Alan Hevesy in New York. He was the chairman of the organization that oversaw all of the state.
And the full page
States.
The full page ads in the New York Times, I think those are very powerful,
right,
and moving.
Fabulous. It was my idea. And we found somebody to really put them together and to do it the right way.
Those were international embarrassments for what they did. I think those were wonderful. So congrats on that alone. I mean, I think that may have turned the whole tide, right? Because then you got national opinion going for you, right?
We targeted Bayer, Mercedes, and Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Mercedes, I think it was the production line that they would like to forget.
Yeah. Well, a lot of Americans don't realize that Ford and GM, I mean, a lot of their engines were going into German military equipment and vehicles, right? I mean, that's what they were doing.
Yeah. Well, Ford had a plant there.
Yeah, so they're going into their Jeeps and their tanks and everything else. So I know that they were subsidiaries and they could probably try to skirt around that way. But the fact that you're telling me that those plants were not bombed during the war is very telling. So I think.
Believe me, there are many stories that you can tell, one worse than the other.
Yeah.
And that's why, but you know, some people think that maybe never forget is wrong. But I remember watching the boy in the striped pajamas.
Yes.
And I remember coming across somebody who looked at me and he said, Mr. Weiss, did that really happen? And I said, you don't know anything about the Holocaust? He said, no.
Wow.
So I asked about 20 people at random.
Huh.
And maybe two or three knew what I was talking about.
Well, we definitely need to up our game in education. I think only 14% of Americans can't even read. You know, 14% cannot read. But Mel Weiss, thank you so much for being our guest. And they have this bonus track now to go with everything else. And I know there's more to come with stories from you. So we'll see you soon. Okay, Mel?
Okay, thanks.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Right.
Bye-bye.